what would it take for every student to be known, loved, and inspired. We created a time and place for the high school kids where that is happening. It's called POD. It's our advisory system. They have a dedicated living room, and it also has like a little kitchen area, and that's where their lockers are. So there are homes within the school.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning Podcast. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with educators, leaders, and change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. I'm so excited today. I have Bobby McDonald, and it's, for me, a real pleasure to finally talk to her about City Neighbors and tell you a little bit more about her. In fact, let me just tell you a little background. She's founder and served as the first board president of City Neighbors Charter School in Baltimore, Maryland. And she was selected by the Annie E. Casey Foundation as one of the 16 leaders from across the country for the 2013-2014 Children and Family Fellowship. And that's just a little bit about Bobby. Welcome, Bobby.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I'm so, so fortunate to have you here. I was able to meet you first. I think we met at EDUCON.
That's right.
That's right. It was last January. And we talked, and then we said, I got to come and see your school, right? So I went over with Lori Rowe, who's a friend and a technology specialist in Delaware. I ended up working there, and we ended up meeting you at your school in February. I was pretty blown away. It's pretty
Thank
amazing.
You.
And you told me a little bit about your background and how you started it. But can you just tell me your own story about your family?
Sure. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and my family moved out to the south suburbs in the 70s. And I come from a long line of educators and salesmen. So I come by it honestly, Barbara. And I had a really interesting experience because the school I moved away from in Chicago was a really strict direct instruction experience. And I remember we were reading Sally, Dick, and Jane books. Do you remember those? And we would sit in a circle, a reading circle, and each person would get to read one word. And I wished, you know, with all my heart that I would get to read Sally or Jane, you know, but it was always and or the. And it was, you know, amazing that we moved to the south suburbs. And as soon as we walked in the door of that school, it's called Willow School in Homewood, Illinois. There were kids out in the hallway, like laying on their tummies with the math books open. And there were kids like practicing a show. And I, you know, grabbed my mom's hand and I said, "Mom, those guys are going to get in so much trouble." And she was like, "Well, it's a little different here, Bobby, you know." And that made such a big impression on me. But anyway, so I grew up and I became a kindergarten teacher and an early childhood educator. And I worked in child development labs, and I love that research way of teachers thinking about, you know, how kids learn and how you create a great environment. That led me to some different positions, and I just have always loved teaching and learning and working together with other teachers. So, after undergrad, we moved out to Maryland for graduate school, and my husband and I had children. We have four kids. When the youngest was starting kindergarten, I went and visited the public school near my house, and I just couldn't believe how it was, you know, so restrictive. The learning and teaching was so restrictive, and it was filled with good people, but the design was wrong. And that was the night Maryland passed the charter school law. So we had the opportunity to imagine a great public school, and that's kind of how I got here to be doing what I'm doing now.
Oh, I didn't know all the story about Willow, and you didn't go back that far with me when we talked. So that's pretty cool. So that's how you came up with the City Neighbors? Is that when you did that?
You know, when when Maryland passed the charter school law, at first I didn't even know what a charter school was, you know. But a friend called me and said, hey, why don't, you know, you start a school? And I realized that the idea for City Neighbors would be the best school we could imagine, and that we could gather a lot of folks together and do the imagining. And, you know, I had really strong feelings on project-based learning, arts integration, Reggio Emilia-inspired, a family teacher co-op. But the work of a school is to have the people in the building imagining together. So once I realized I didn't have to be exactly right, I felt like I had the courage to give it a try. You know, all I had to do was gather folks who wanted to imagine together, and then create an environment where that becomes the culture.
Wow. I'm looking at, when I walked through your school, that it was so apparent that the culture was from everyone, even the kids. I walked in and some of the kids were talking to me and showing me around and with you, and it was just so welcoming. And, you know, I was going to ask you about the project based in Reggio a little later, but you brought it up, and about the learning environments. Is that kind of what inspired you?
You know, as an early childhood educator, I learned about Reggio Emilia at the University of Illinois and at University of Maryland, College Park. And Reggio Emilia, you know, is this amazing program out of Italy that really honors the teacher as researcher, and it really honors the physical environment as being important, and it honors the parents as being the first teacher. And so that just sounds like good education to me. So the idea of pushing that up to the higher grades makes a lot of sense. The interesting part is that, you know, I'm almost uncomfortable saying it's like my school, because it's really not. It's owned by so many people. And that's the design. That is like the secret sauce of City Neighbors, is that the teachers and educators are around tables and in groups and working collaboratively. And they are arguing and discussing and imagining and creating what makes City Neighbors come alive. And that gets transferred to the kids, because they have a lot of ownership over their own learning too. So I think it's interesting, because I think any school can do that. They don't actually have to agree with the certain components we love and hold so dear.
Oh, I love the idea, because you could tell from the kids they had, and your levels are K-12, right?
Yeah, you know, what happened is after we opened the first school in 2005, the wait list grew and grew. And at first we thought about expanding that building, but we couldn't really serve that many more kids at that first site. And so we put in for two more charters, and we opened another K-8, City Neighbors Hamilton, and then a high school, City Neighbors High School. So we've grown, you know, from a one little small co-op to three schools serving a little over 850 kids.
Wow, it was so warm. I mean, yeah. Let's talk about the environment, since okay. You talk about Reggio, and I'm a real proponent of Reggio schools, especially K-12. And that's when I saw it, I knew right away, especially when I walked in the kindergarten. So there's something about the environment. And when I saw the way that it was designed, it looked like, when you said you imagined it, how were the kids involved in that?
Well, you know what? I think the first thing that happens is that the school and the people in it are holding a way of seeing kids. So when you see children as powerful and capable and loving and worthy of the deepest respect and curious and wanting so much to be a part of things, then the teaching and learning is different, and the physical environment should be different too, right? And so, you know, that old model, industrial model of the tables and chairs lined up, ready to receive from the all-knowing teachers, an old-fashioned model now. yeah, it just doesn't, it's not really what we know about kids and how we operate these days. So to us, it makes a lot of sense that the environment is designed to build independence and to allow for creativity. And so we always are questioning, and still, you know, even this school year, I was walking in and out of the classrooms and doing a lot of thinking and talking with teachers over the summer. we're always thinking, why do we have these certain desks in a school? Why? You know, and is it true? Does it have to look, you know, a little bit like a hospital in here, you know? So we're constantly pushing ourselves to let go of what we thought it always had to be. And then, you know, we kind of go to extreme and it's quite fun, you know, like that every color matters, every texture matters. You know, are there like loving, warm places to sit, you know, and what kind of conversations are going to happen? Is it just two people? Is it just someone who just needs a moment to themselves? Is there any area to go into, you know, when you're a reader and you're in K through three? It's nice to go under a table and do some reading, you know? And so we kind of think of it from the student's perspective and try to offer like a nice array of possibilities.
When I walked in, there were pictures on the wall of the freshmen.
Oh,
I think that's what you said. Yeah. So that was kind of cool because it's their school. And usually, you know, there's a trophy case and there's pictures of it, graduating classes and things like that. But you make it so right away people feel welcome right when they enter the school.
Thank you. Yeah. So the high school has every year the freshmen get the lobby is what we say. And their pictures go up and we do an unveiling. But I think the cool thing about that tradition also is, as you say, symbolically, it shows what we value. But those pictures are not the same. They're not all standing in front of the same background. So we get a photographer, and that photographer works with every single freshman and says, where do you want to be in the building for your picture? So, you know, of those 110 pictures, each one is completely unique. And that, I think, is really symbolic of what we're trying to do. When we started the high school, we said, what would it take for every student to be known, loved, and inspired? And then we tried to answer that question. And, you know, having the unique pictures of those freshmen in the lobby is one of the ways, small things that we do to really establish it's going to be different here. You know, whatever middle school you came from in Baltimore, this is going to be a little bit different.
Oh, you could tell. Even, well, the first place you took us was the cafeteria.
Right.
And you said the kids designed it? Or?
Yeah. You know, my brother Michael, he helped design restaurants in Chicago. And so we flew him out here from Chicago and like, Michael, work with the kids. And he loved doing it. It was great. So he spent a couple weeks in the summer before we opened working with kids. And it was amazing. He took them through a process and it was hard for them to imagine what the cafeteria could look like. They were like, maybe we can put some plants in it. You know, they really couldn't let themselves dream. But then he showed them a slideshow of here's a traditional cafeteria and here's one with plants in it. And here's one with windows. That feels a little better, doesn't it? And then here's one with some booths. Isn't that cool? And help the kids come along. And then finally, he showed them a picture of the Hard Rock Cafe. And the kids were like, oh, really? We could design something like that? And he said, now let's get to work, you know? But for Baltimore City in an urban setting, to have a cafeteria that was designed by the kids, and there's booths, and there's, you know, high seating, low seating, there's couches, there's outdoor seating, there's whatever the kids thought of, he did. There's a bike up on the wall, there's a stage, there's a piano, you know, there's cool cafe lighting. You know, the kids will, they have voluntarily or without any supervision, they've held dance-offs at lunchtime. You know, it really is a space where you see the kids being kids and enjoying each other's company and eating lunch. And, you know, I really don't think it should be the exception. I think we need to rethink how schools look and feel, because if we're asking kids to become citizens that can operate with a level of independence and community and commitment to each other, then we need to start practicing in kindergarten, you know, for every year that we have them in school. And the physical environment helps us to do that.
Well, I'm probably going to talk about a lot of the environment first, because walking down the halls, I noticed there were no lockers. And you had like window seats and the colors and some things. I mean, it was just really warm, really warm.
Yeah. Well, we had the opportunity to renovate this 1931 public school building, and we wanted to honor, you know, the beauty of that building. which of course was in terrible shape when we got it. But we also wanted to really bring it forward into the now. And so we knocked out as many walls as we could, and we inserted huge windows from the classroom to the hallway. And the idea is to have the hallways be extensions of the classroom. And the teacher can do passive supervision. You know, you can be in the classroom teaching and you can glance out those windows and you see the kids out there working. So you're not right on top of them, but you're also not so far removed that it's hard as a teacher not to be able to, you know, glance out there. And then we built in benches so that the kids actually had a place to sit. We carpeted the hallways. We put the lockers into advisories, you know, in answer to that question, what would it take for every student to be known, loved, and inspired? We created a time and place for the high school kids where that is happening. It's called POD. It's our advisory system. So for an hour, 5 days a week, the whole entire high school is in POD, and each POD is about 16 kids. They have a dedicated living room, and it also has like a little kitchen area, and that's where their lockers are. So there are homes within the school. And then also in the hallways, we put up this great recycled material called homosote. It makes it, it's kind of like a drywall, but it's so easy to hang student work. And, you know, as a teacher, the work's always popping off the wall. You know, it can be really frustrating. But this stuff is great. And you can always paint over it every summer to refresh it. But and then you have a big wall like that. You can show students thinking. You know, you can show the process of a project as it unfolds. And that is important to us. You know, it's called documentation, making thinking visible, making learning visible, as they say at Project Zero. And our teachers work hard on doing that because, again, it shows what we value. And it's treating the student work as, you know, the honored data that it really is for what's happening in the building.
Well, I noticed that. I was going to ask you a separate question about that, but I like that you brought it up because when I walked down the hall, everywhere you could see evidence of learning, yeah, and different ways. And you even had a fab lab that was really fun. I could have stayed there all day. You even had a bowling alley in there. It was kind of...
Yeah, well, it's a 1940s rec building that's on the campus. And in the basement, there are two lanes of duck pin bowling. So we didn't put it in, but we did restore it because in Baltimore, duck pin bowling is pretty sacred. And it seemed like a good part of the fab lab, and it's a maker space. So down there, you know, kids learn how to do the digital fabrication and the 3D printing, laser engraver, woodworking, welding, sewing, you know, to make things with your hands and to create an idea and design something and produce it is really, really great learning for kids. And some of them really haven't had that experience before.
Well, I love that some of the sculptures that were there were so cool. I do have to say, I grew up in Maryland and I played duck pin bowling. So it was for me like going home.
That's so good.
But, you know, and then being able to go through all the different grade levels. I mean, I saw your pre-K and your kindergarten. It was, and I talked to one of your teachers. Well, actually watched her. There was more of that Reggio approach. And the kids were really self-directed. You know, I'm into this idea that kids can have agency at any age.
They really,
you really
can.
You're doing it. It's just pretty, pretty exciting for it. You know, I was going to ask you all these different questions and you kind of pulled them in together. So I have... There was one, let's just talk about the preschool, the K-3, you know, the primary grades.
Okay,
first.
And let me clarify, we don't have pre-K, it just starts at kindergarten.
Oh, kindergarten, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I'm glad you thought it was a pre-K, that makes me happy. Because it's a developmental model, you know, and so some of the kids do need, but I think it's just called a good kindergarten classroom.
Well, what was neat is the way it was designed. Is that they worked independently. The teacher was more like Reggio, observing the process and then and allowing the kids to ask questions and then try to solve the problems themselves. And they were also creating, and they were working in different parts of the room. It wasn't all, you know, like there's a work center and you go in, and then you have worksheets or you're drawing a pumpkin, whatever. They were doing a lot of cool ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we really try, you know, K through 12, work has a purpose, you know, your work has meaning. And most worksheets don't have a purpose except maybe repetition and practice, which is good maybe if you're learning, you know, your handwriting, I guess. But we really try to do authentic work. And like you, we really believe that can start as soon as you enter school. And it actually goes all the way through 12th grade and really into our lives, right? We all want to do meaningful work that makes a difference. And the projects that we do usually have an essential question driving them. So it's amazing if you get a third grade class taking on a question like, is peace possible? You know, and they spend weeks trying to get to the bottom of that. I mean, these are the kind of citizens we want. You know, people who are willing to work to figure out, well, who do we need to talk to? And how will we show what we've figured out? And what would we need to read? And how do we represent that learning? And, you know, how do we communicate with others? And what do we think? Is it possible or not? You know, that's the kind of teaching and learning we're after.
So I see that when I'm trying to look for examples of voice and choice, I go to City Neighbors because you're really giving them the ability to critically think, solve these problems themselves. I'm going to have to come back.
Oh, please come back. I just want to say one other thing, and that is that it's the teachers on a daily basis really listening to the kids and really spending the time thinking, you know, how do I provoke that next thought and that next question? Our teachers are just incredible people. You know, I wish we could triple their salaries, and I wish we could really play with scheduling to make it more humane for them. Because I have a feeling that's the next edge for us at City Neighbors, is why is it scheduled so that the teacher has no time to think? You know, we close early one day a week, and, you know, aftercare starts at that time. And our teachers have a couple hours to collaborate, and we build in collaboration throughout the week and different structures for folks to work together. But I have a feeling that if we would really mess with how schools are scheduled for students and for teachers, we could get even stronger results.
So that's your future. I was going to ask you, what is the future? And you're looking at how to get more teacher voice. So everybody owns the process.
Well, I think definitely everyone's owning the process. Teachers have a strong voice. There's no, you know, all the major decisions that happen at City Neighbors are with teachers being part of the decision making. And, you know, all the hiring and direction and goals. And it's definitely true, but sometimes it's hard when you're in the midst of it. You still are holding on to ways that we've always done it. And it's hard to let go or hard to see that. So I think our teachers are always pushing the edge. And that's exciting to be a part of.
Well, I saw that in the one English class where the kids were all in different sofas and chairs all around in a circle. I mean, you did tell me you got a lot of your furniture from Hotel Liquidators, so it was really cool. But I did see that how the kids read. They then really have great discussions about it. And there was a lot of involvement where the kids were driving the questions and the ideas. So I think that you're doing a lot more than you think you are. It's just the time constraints, because we're built on teaching subjects, not the kids more, because that's how it's always been.
Yeah. It's hard when you're in it sometimes to see what it looks like from the outside. So that's why it's so great when you came to visit, because you were asking me these really good probing questions, and that was making me think a lot of new thoughts. So you'll have to come back.
I have to come back. Well, like I said, I grew up in Maryland, and it was fun to go there and see the duck pin bowling. I'll have to actually try it a few times. But to me, this is like revisiting home. You made school like home and comfortable, and everyone was happy. The kids were happy, the teachers were happy. And so it's a beautiful model, and I hope people visit your school and walk away saying, maybe I could do that. You know, that idea.
Thank you so much. We love to share, and we also love to keep learning. So we welcome folks to come and reach out to us.
So we'll be putting a blog together around us and putting the resources and some of the pictures I took and maybe some others in there. And when we post the podcast, we'll do that.
That'd be great.
Bobby, this was so wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Barbara.
You're welcome. Thank you, everyone. This has been Rethinking Learning, Conversation on Learning with Bobby McDonald. What a wonderful conversation today. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Bobby McDonald. Make sure you visit BarbaraBray.net to learn more about Bobby, City Neighbors, and all the wonderful work around the learner-centered environments. Please subscribe to BarbaraBray.net so you don't miss any of the conversations.